Welcome to the Magic and Mindfulness Podcast. You're joining me, Amy Maxwell, on my journey of understanding the world of light magic in order to cultivate mindful living. I'm so excited for you to join me on this path of discovery. Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode. I just love it when I can have chats to so many beautiful souls shining their light in the world. And today is no different because I am bringing onto the show a very, very dear friend of mine to speak about overcoming limiting beliefs and creating a more positive association when it comes to a money mindset. Kata Shiveni is a certified hypnotherapist, transformational life coach, and founder of Alchemy. And not only is Kata a really close friend of mine, but she's also been my personal coach for quite some time now, where she's been working with me to shift my own limiting beliefs and step into a higher soul-led potential. And during my time working with Kata as part of her coaching program, she's really helped me so much personally that today for this episode, I wanted her to hone in on overcoming limiting beliefs as a topic in particular, because that was what I really believe has helped me so much and will be also so valuable to you as it has been for me. And I totally appreciate that sometimes accessing a personal coach is not always possible and accessible for everyone. So we wanted to really use this podcast as a way to give you some insights, tips, and tools to help you overcome your own limiting beliefs. And obviously, I always think it's amazing if you can find a way to receive one-on-one personal support. But I hope you'll find this conversation just as valuable today. So to also quickly touch on Kata's story, because it is really inspiring as she's really had to work through and overcome her own limiting beliefs in order to get to where she is in her life right now. Kata set out about 5 years ago on a journey to find herself and discover her purpose. So she traded in a full-time high-paid job, a long-term relationship, and a comfortable life for a blind leap of faith, which led her to travel around the world from Asia to Amsterdam. And now she's currently living in Mexico City and has really left that old reality behind. But as she's continued to follow her intuition and dive into the depths of her own personal development, if you ask her today, she'll say that she's never looked back since, because Kat has had to overcome her own limiting beliefs to do what she loves doing now, which is inspiring others to take that leap of faith and connect to their purpose. So today we get into the nitty-gritty of what limiting beliefs are, how they're formed, and how you can overcome them. I also share some of my personal stories and experiences, especially around old pattern behaviors and how that was previously affecting me from taking my own leaps of faith. And we also apply those theories and speak about how it can translate into real-life application in order to create a more purpose-led reality. So I'm so excited for you to hear this one. Let's do it. Let's start the show. So, hey, Kata, how are you doing today?
Hi, Amy. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I've had a nice day actually today. I went for a massage. And that was great.
That sounds amazing.
It was lovely. Yeah. And where are you dialing in from in the world so that listeners
I'm
know?
I'm dialing in from Mexico City. So actually, to caveat this, if you hear any loud noises in the background, like honking or, you know, bells or could be anything really, it's probably coming from the street because it's never really quiet in the city. So I apologize in advance.
I think that's good to know, isn't it? I visited you in Mexico last year and the street noise and the street traffic is quite something else. So yeah, weird noises, definitely good to know.
Impossible to leave people voice notes while you're walking outside.
Such a special place. So yeah, I'm so happy that Kat is here. We're really close friends. And also I'm, more excited that she's here in a sense, not only because we're good friends, but to introduce the listeners to my personal coach. So I've been working with Kata now for, I think it's been like 6 months, right? We've been working together.
Yeah, actually a bit more since January. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, it's gone really fast. And I've really felt a lot of huge shifts with you. And particularly about some of the topics we're going to talk to today. So limiting beliefs and money mindsets. So I thought it'd be really cool to share some of that insight that I've been moving through with listeners. And I know that it's a topic that I've been struggling with over the years, now not as much, thanks to the work we've been doing together. But I know that it's really sort of a pain point, especially for a lot of people that are light workers or kind of wanting to open their own spiritual business. And I know, generally speaking, people are also just like assessing what they want to be doing with their life now, especially post-COVID. And I think limiting belief and money mindset can really help and benefit a lot of people. So that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Great. I mean, I think before we go into that, it's probably useful to understand kind of what are beliefs, right? And where do they come from? So the beliefs that we have are essentially kind of the way that we view ourselves and the world. And a lot of the time, these beliefs are formed at a really young age. So actually, most of our beliefs are wired into us before the age of 7. So before the age of 7, in terms of kind of child developmental psychology, we're actually in what's called a theta brainwave state, which is similar to the state that we're in during a meditation, for example. So these are called our formative years for a reason, right? Because mm-hmm. it's when we really form our kind of sense of identity and also our perceptions of ourselves and of the world. So during this time, we're like a sponge and we absorb everything around us. And these can be beliefs that are both good and bad, right? So not all beliefs are limiting, but it's kind of our point of view on the world, I guess. And sometimes these can become limiting beliefs, so they can become kind of negative beliefs in response to events that we experience. And actually, from a grown-up point of view, looking back, they might be really minor things. So it doesn't even need to be kind of, you know, big childhood trauma. It can be something really small or kind of seemingly small, like getting called out by the teacher in front of the class and getting laughed at by kids. Mm. Later on, this can turn into a belief that speaking out in front of people isn't safe. So it can turn into a fear of public speaking, for example, right? Mm-hmm. Or coming back to money mindset, which is what we're going to be talking about, it might be something as simple as hearing your parents repeatedly say something like, making money is hard work, or money doesn't grow on trees, for example, right? Yeah. Which is such a throwaway thing. But as a child, this really gets absorbed into your subconscious. It becomes something that like you adopt as a belief that you have about the world. Again, a lot of the time, it's actually not about the event itself either. It's your response to that event. So it's kind of the thoughts, the emotion, and the belief that you form in response to something that can be seemingly minor, but that affects your perception of reality up until your adult years.
Yeah. No, thanks for explaining that. I think it's always good to go back through, because I know we've been doing sessions together and really going deep, but actually just to go over like the core principle of what a belief is. And actually just like when you were talking, I was like getting all the flashbacks from our sessions. Yes. And I feel like we're going to go deep into this one, aren't we, Kata?
Yeah. I mean, so why beliefs are really important is because your beliefs create your reality, right? So the way that you look at reality becomes how you experience it.
Right.
So whether you want to look at it, and I actually, you know, you can look at this from kind of the more spiritual law of attraction point of view, which is, you know, the energy that you put out, you kind of get reflected back the vibrational match to that. Or you can look at it from a kind of simple, or, you know, not so simple neuroscience perspective, which is really that the mind believes anything that you tell it, right? So whether it's good or bad, your mind doesn't really know the difference, but it just believes the words and the images that you're telling your mind. So for example, if you tell your mind that my job is a nightmare, it will be like, oh God, like this is, you know, you're under threat basically from your job. So I better kind of, you know, do something to keep you away from it. But it kind of always presents back to you what you put out. So the thoughts that you think really create this kind of perception that you have of your reality. It becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Because your putting those thoughts out, and then you're mm-hmm. seeing more of that, you know, whatever you focus on, you get more of. Yeah. So really becoming aware of these beliefs and starting to shift them, you can actually take control of your reality. You know, that sounds, may sound dramatic, but it's true, because it's really, your thoughts are, you control your thoughts, right? And by controlling your thoughts, you can actually control your experience of reality, and you can yeah. change your reality.
Absolutely. And I've experienced this with the work that we've done together. I think I've had so many, you know, I'm happy to speak about my own personal things as well, even though I'm already going red and blushing, because I know it's going to go there. But, you know, just like patterns that we get stuck in. And sometimes we don't even acknowledge the patterns that are there and how like deep rooted they can be. And one of the limiting beliefs that I had recently, which I shared with you, and you were like so hilarious to correct me, was like, I've obviously gone freelance, for the listeners that tune in, for quite some time. And when I was looking for another job, I texted Kata and I was like, oh, you know, like I'm looking for another job. I guess like worst case scenario, I can always go back to working in a shop or walking dogs. And I was like, that wouldn't be so bad, you know, genuinely. And like, there's no shame in walking dogs. I think that's one of the best jobs ever. But Kata, you were like, Amy, no, that's such a limiting belief. You don't need to do that. You've got experience in what you do and you will find something. And then I was like, oh yeah. Like, but it's just interesting, like the default that we go back to in our mind, because if we've been doing that for so long, sometimes we don't even notice that it's there. And that's why I'm really, you know, I really enjoyed working together, because it's been such a powerful shift for me, like to just stop myself sometimes and acknowledge, like you said, like the awareness of that limiting belief being there. And it can come up in the weirdest situations as well, which is what I've been noticing, and like having to try to undo that. And it's a constant process. And that's why I think it's really interesting to discuss, like, yeah, what are some of the ways that we can start to shift those beliefs? Because especially those motherfuckers that are like really deep rooted and really annoying, it can be so transformational. And I've seen such a shift in myself, even just, yeah, however long we've been working together, just being aware of those thoughts is a huge one. Do you have any other thoughts on how to catch them and how to work with those beliefs?
Yeah. Just to add to that, actually, there's a great quote that I love by Carl Gustav Jung, who's one of my personal heroes. And he says, until we make the subconscious conscious, it will control our life and we will call it fate. Mm. And I just think this is, I mean, that's exactly what he's talking about, is these beliefs, right? And a lot yeah. of the time they are subconscious. And I think this is why mm-hmm. coaching and therapy in particular can be so helpful, actually, in just becoming aware of those beliefs. And once you have the awareness, it's really just kind of working on that and the repetition and just catching yeah. yourself.
It's moving
and changing the thoughts, right?
Exactly. And I think the difference that I found, because I also think therapy is super valuable, but the difference between that and coaching is like, oh, I know there are therapists out there. Sorry, I don't want to speak. I'm not an expert, but you know, the sort of traditional sense is that you talk it out, but like we've really been moving through stuff. And yeah, I find that amazing that coaching is able to do that, to move through things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, to answer your question, so things we can do to start shifting these beliefs, the first and the most important step is this kind of awareness and understanding. So the awareness that you have this belief, and then an understanding of where it came from. So again, those kind of situations, events, memories that first created that belief, or, you know, the things that we kept hearing as a child that kind of wired that into our brain, and just kind of really becoming aware of it and understanding the thoughts and the emotions that we had in response to that. So really the kind of the root cause of it. And then the next step would be to really kind of look at it objectively, again, with your, you know, adult hat on, and start questioning that belief and thinking, is this really true? You know, what evidence do I have for this belief? Or is this something that actually is a subjective belief that I have, that actually, when I think about it, it doesn't really make sense. So you start to throw doubt on that belief. And you also think about, is this serving me? Like, is this belief actually creating the reality that I want? So knowing that my beliefs are shaping my reality, do I want to choose this belief? Or, you know, do I want to choose something better? Mm-hmm. So the next step then would be, if you do decide it's not serving you and it's not actually true, you just decide to let it go, and then you replace it with a new and a better belief that actually serves the reality that you want to create. And then really it's a matter of repetition. So the mind learns by repetition. So you just need to really kind of practice, even if at first it feels uncomfortable. I know we've been working with some affirmations, for example, and kind of the positive beliefs, Amy, and mm-hmm. it's uncomfortable at first because it's unfamiliar again. Right. So the brain always goes to things that are familiar, doesn't like the unfamiliar. So it feels weird because it feels like you're kind of, you don't really believe it yet, but you need to repeat it to yourself, right? But honestly, with belief work, it is a matter of making the unfamiliar familiar by repetition. And you literally kind of fake it till you make it, or you lie to your mind until it starts believing the new belief.
Yeah. And I think one of the hardest things, certainly just speaking from personal experience, I've been doing a lot of this work lately, just also on my own, just after our sessions, and it's like a constant process. And I think you really get to know your brain a lot more in that process. And actually what I've found, you know, is that the brain is not always nice. It's the voice in my head, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, is really, really mean and self-deprecating. And actually I think it can be the smallest thing that sets me off. And like one of my sort of things that we've been working through is also like people pleasing, which I think ties into a lot of that limiting belief and kind of keeping myself small. And there's been instances recently where I've been triggered by something, and, you know, I won't even catch that awareness straight away because it's so deep rooted that it's there. But then I've been, you know, working on some methods that you've shared with me to kind of reprogram the brain in that way. And I do feel like I've made a lot of positive impact just by these small things. But it's really tough. And I don't know if you've got any sort of tips for people that, you know, do have kind of my throat chakra is blocked, obviously, that do have, struggle with anxiety, mental health, that have like this quite unhealthy relationship with their brain in the sense that it's just always very loud. Like, are there ways that we can just quieten that and in an easy way, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we all have this inner critic, and for some of us, it's louder and it's harsher than for mm-hmm. others, but really it's learning to work with your mind and dialogue with your mind, I think, which again begins with awareness. So even just things like journaling. So try giving that part of you a voice, and understanding as well. I think what helps a lot is to have empathy for that voice, because actually the negative voice in your brain, where it comes from is it always comes from a good intention, right? So try to understand what it's trying to do for you, because a lot of the time, actually, what that voice is trying to do is to keep you safe. So to protect you from a painful experience. And it's often kind of, so coming back to this example, right, where you stand up in front of the class and everybody laughs at you, you develop this belief that it's not safe to speak up in front of other people. It was really painful. It was really embarrassing, especially as a child. So your mind just wants to keep you safe from this. So it might do that by giving you negative talk. So before you need to kind of give a presentation, it's like, you know, you're such a loser, you can't do this. You know, it says horrible things to you to prevent you from speaking in front of people, really to prevent pain. So actually understanding and empathizing with what's behind this voice. And a lot of the time it's fear and it's wanting to keep you safe, right? Mm-hmm. So the first step, I think, is kind of recognizing where it's coming from and then almost befriending that voice. And like, think of it as, it comes from the really primal part of your brain, right? The kind of fight or flight, survival mode, reptilian brain, which is really kind of fear-based. But actually by almost reparenting that part and not letting it talk to you in a negative way, but being like, I see you, I hear you, I understand that you're afraid, but you don't need to be afraid because we've got this, right? Mm-hmm. So there's kind of the compassion. There's also, if you write down everything that this voice is saying to you, so by journaling, just give it a voice and just let everything kind of come out that it's wanting to say to you, and then read over that and just think about, like, would you ever talk to your friend like this or your children, right? So, I mean, they're usually, this voice is saying really horrible things. Yeah. And then you just think, well, why would I be talking to myself like this? You know,
totally. It's
the things, the words that we say to ourselves are actually more powerful, whether they're negative or positive, than those that anyone else will say to us. So we really need to practice turning the self-criticism into self-praise, because equally the praise that you give yourself is actually worth so much more mm-hmm. than the praise you get from someone else, right? If a shop assistant tells you you look great in those jeans, you know they've kind of got an agenda because they want to sell you something. But yeah. if you praise yourself, you don't have an agenda. So really kind of practicing, A, empathizing with and understanding where that voice is coming from, you know, reparenting it, actually giving it a voice and a seat at the table, and then just kind of calming it down can be really helpful. And then turning those negative thoughts, those critical thoughts, into praise thoughts, and just kind of turning them on your head and just being kinder to yourself and setting the intention to do that, I think.
Those are great tips. I just love hearing what you're saying. It's just like, it's also just a reminder, isn't it? I think with these things, it's just, yeah, like we were saying, it's just like the pattern, the repeating of behavior and rewiring your brain is work, and it takes time, and it's not necessarily a quick fix. And mm-hmm. I think for some of us, like you said, that do have sort of, you know, different relationships with our brain, it's just putting in the work constantly, I think, is also the challenge, and just spotting that straight away. But I also like what you just said about, in a sense of it not necessarily being a negative and a positive, right? It's just befriending your brain in a different way. So I really mm-hmm. think that's really helpful.
And knowing that you have power over your thoughts, right? You're absolutely in control of your thoughts. Mm-hmm. You might not be used to that because you're used to your brain kind of running on autopilot yeah. and believing everything that it's telling you, but just take back control of those thoughts and, like, we know, with compassion, but firmly, and tell your brain the things that you want it to be thinking, because those are the things, again, that it becomes like a blueprint of what you feel and the actions that you take, which then shapes your reality. So tell yourself better things.
Yeah, no, I love that so much. I was actually recently in, you know this, but for listeners as well, I love going to float tanks. So they're these like flotation tanks that you can go to. You turn all the lights off and you lie in a salt water bath for an hour. And the idea with them is that they de-stress you and also de-stimulate you, because you're on your phone normally all the time. So I really like to go to these because they used to make me feel really relaxed, because I would just tell my mind before I went in, you know, or myself, because we're the same thing. Is that, you know, we're going here to relax. This is time for you. And then recently my mind has been so mean, like when I've gone into these float tanks. And then this week, actually, I had like this really profound experience where I was probably for like the 50 minutes of that float tank, it was hell. I was like battling with my mind. It was just saying really mean things, making up worst case scenarios. Again, like loads of limiting beliefs thrown in there. And then by the end of that session, I'd probably had about 2 minutes of peace, clarity, and I'd walked out of that float tank in a good place with my mind. And it made me think about how we just don't want to do that. Because you were saying, like, you know, building up that relationship is really not, if we're not used to it, it can be real. It can be literally like a minefield, to be cheesy with it. But yeah, I don't know, for anyone listening, I think as well, it's just like it takes time and it takes work and it can be really uncomfortable. But I think getting like sticky and getting in there and kind of getting to the root cause of these things, it's so worth it, because it's just going to increase your threshold, isn't it, with how you respond to situations and how you show up. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's tough to create that relationship with your brain.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you're talking about worst case scenarios as well. And I was reading something really interesting about this kind of worry that we have or anxiety about the future and kind of painting these worst case scenarios. Actually, the reason our mind does that is because it's to cope with the uncertainty, right? So actually we would rather have certainty, even if it's negative, than be in the uncertainty. And again, this kind of comes from childhood, you know, wounds and insecurity and unsafety. So we create these worst case scenarios, because actually when you do that, you gain a small sense of certainty that something will happen. So your brain actually gets a dopamine hit from that. So you feel calmed because you feel like you've got a solution, even if it's a bad solution. So I always think like understanding is power, right? So even just understanding that your brain does this and what it does chemically, it's the same as we've talked about this many times, that fear and excitement, right, are the same chemical in your brain, actually. So if you feel scared or nervous about something, your brain is emitting the same chemicals and your body is reacting in the same way, actually, that you do when you're excited about something. So actually, whether you're scared or excited is really just an interpretation that you put onto a situation with your brain. So if you get to choose whether you're scared or excited, why not choose excitement? Because it's a more positive emotion, right? Mm.
Wow. That's mind blowing for me though, what you just said about the planning and outcome. And that makes so much sense, doesn't it? And that's something I'm definitely going to journal on after, because I do that all the time. It's just like go into that worst case scenario just to, that's very interesting. It does give you power just to know that fact. And I think, I think for a lot of people that'd be really helpful. Thank you, Kata. So should we dive into the money mindset? How do you feel about doing that? Okay.
Let's do it.
Cool. So because when we've been, doing the sessions together, I think we've been really working on limiting beliefs. And a lot of people, I think, and this is generalizing, but I think there's a lot of stuff out there on, manifestation and sort of getting, the things of our dreams. But I do think there's so much work that we can do in the money mindset and around the limiting beliefs. It's already certainly helped me from the past year in such a significant way. So I'd love to dive into that a little bit more. Why do you think, actually, maybe we can start with, why do you think so many of us might have blocks around money these days? Because I know I certainly still do. I mean, it's still something we're working with, but it seems to be quite a common theme. And do you think it maybe is linked to all this stuff we're seeing on social media and all this like manifesting, buzzwords and all that stuff? Like, do you have thoughts around that?
100%. So I think it definitely is something that's really common. I'm not sure whether it's linked to what we're seeing around manifesting. I think that's just one kind of point of view. I just think, to me, unless you're kind of dealing with the root cause again of like why you have these beliefs, you can manifest all you want, right? But you're always going to be doing it kind of from the surface level, right? The key to manifestation is that you really need to believe and embody the thing that you're manifesting. So unless you're removing the blocks and the root cause, you're always going to have a block to really manifesting, I think, the full kind of potential of what you're going for. Because there's a difference between embodying it and doing it from the head, right? Because you think you want it. So I actually think what's interesting, what you just touched on as well, is that I think it's, in particular, it's people like coaches, healers, light workers, people who are kind of working in these professions. And a lot more of us are kind of moving into these professions as well. We talked about this a bit at the start, kind of post-COVID. I think we're all kind of, coming back to our calling and our purpose and what we really want to do and the work we want to do from our hearts. But I think especially if, you identify as kind of one of these people, one of us, it's very common to struggle with money mindset, because there is this kind of inherent tension between doing something good and helping people and then charging money for it. So you kind of have this belief that good people don't charge money for doing good things, or spiritual people shouldn't charge money, or it's not fair to charge people money for helping them. Right.
Definitely.
So I think a lot of us have this kind of, and also because it's something that you're doing that you love doing, you feel, I think artists have a similar kind of struggle. It's like, well, I love doing this, so it feels wrong to be charging money for it because I actually enjoy it. But just kind of you know, coming kind of, again, creating that awareness around that, that you have this belief and that you can have it all and that it's okay for you to kind of charge money for something, even if you enjoy it, because you're actually offering something in return, right? So we talk a lot about energy exchanges in this field of work. And it's true. I mean, money isn't anything, you know, bad, but I think we do have that kind of, a lot of us have this belief attached to it, that money is somehow dirty or, you know, kind of has these kind of negative associations attached to it. So it's kind of working on those and just seeing it as energy and as something we exchange in exchange for the work that we do. And, you know, what I've said to you certainly many times is that you can't pour from an empty cup, right? Yeah. So I think it's recognizing that actually, you know, if you're exhausted and you're having to really work so hard to make ends meet and you're struggling financially, you'll have nothing left to give. And actually, what you need is you need to be in this kind of place of peace and abundance in order to share that, right? Your cup needs to be full in order for you to share it with other people. So I always think kind of thinking of it because, you know, all of us in these professions, I think we're carers and we're givers, and, you know, it's important to us to kind of be able to help people as well as we can.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be able to do that if you're not, your cup isn't full. So looking after yourself is not just something selfish that you do. So actually making money for the work that you do isn't selfish, but it allows you to be able to give more and actually give more to more people.
Yeah. I think everything you just said, I definitely agree with and resonate. And I've been having a lot of conversations about this actually with other friends recently, particularly who work in this kind of field, or, you know, that we classify ourselves in the world of sort of spirituality, yoga teachers, healers, you know, whatever you want to call us, coaches, therapists, etc. I think there is a sort of dangerous territory that we also are moving in. It's particularly where I live in Amsterdam now. I know you're in Mexico, Catanel, but certainly in Amsterdam, I think there's a bit of a danger of, like, because there's so many people now that want to do, you know, light work and, like you said, kind of like align more to purpose. I've seen certainly people, and I know I've been guilty of this as well, so I have to put my hands up, of like sort of cheapening myself and cheapening what I'm doing to, yeah, kind of please people. And I think that's sort of a people pleasing thing that I do, and I'm really having to reframe that, because I've put out a lot of things in the last year, especially because I've been growing and becoming really passionate and feel like now I have sort of, I don't know, foundations of what I can share in the right way that I feel is the right way. And I think that's been to my own detriment, because, yeah, people then expect that from you, right? It's like you put that out and then that's something that they will see and expect again. So I think money mindset is really important for us. And like you said, it's not just the money itself, but also the energy, the time that we spend. So I would love to know maybe how we can sort of work through some of these pieces, because I think certainly from the work that we've done together, it does kind of tie back to limiting beliefs. So for me, with the money, certainly it's kind of like, I'm not worthy, so therefore I'm going to charge X. And this also goes alongside in my corporate life as well. So I was before charging way less than I should have. And the moment I stepped into that piece of like, no, this is what I can do, and showing up in that way, honestly, like, so much has changed. And now I feel, and it's actually insane, like when I speak, I'm getting full body chills as I'm like speaking this out loud. Like, I find that my life is flowing so much easier, like things just come in and I can receive things so much easier, because it's just that mindset shift. And it's just wild. Anyway, so I would really love to share this with more people, because there must be some sort of like theory or application to kind of creating this better money mindset. And that sort of ties into limiting beliefs. So there's probably so much we can go into, Kata. I know we have a podcast episode, but we're some highlights.
We're definitely going to keep talking after in this recording. But there's, I mean, 100% exactly what you said. I mean, all of this is, again, kind of linked back to our limiting beliefs that we have. And I think fundamentally, there are two really big, like biggie core beliefs that a lot of us have. which are really common. And they're kind of, I always think of beliefs as like, they're a bit like a Jenga tower, right? So they stack on top of each other. And you've got these kind of, you know, big hairy beliefs at the bottom that are kind of the foundation. And a lot of the time, like we've got lots of other beliefs that are stacked up on top of that. But when you start, you know, shaking at the one at the bottom, you pull out the belief at the bottom of the Jenga tower, you can kind of make the whole thing collapse. So these are the big ones we really want to deal with. And the two, I think, that are really at the core of specifically these money blocks that we have are, the first belief is it's not available to me. So this can be about money, but this can also be about love. It can be about success. It can be about anything that you want to create in your life, right? And we have this belief that it's out there, but it's not available to me because, and then we have our rationalizations for that. So it might be, you know, I never had it growing up. So I come from a poor family, you know, or my parents always said that making money is hard, or, you know, this is something that's for other people. Again, it comes back to this fact that it's unfamiliar to us. So we never really had money and this kind of sense of abundance. We don't really know what it feels like. So it feels uncomfortable. So we just kind of go, well, I know it exists, but it's not for me. It's not available to me. So that's the one belief that kind of blocks us from accessing it. And then the other one is really kind of the big one that's at the heart of, you know, a lot of other beliefs, which is what you just touched on. It's this idea that I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not important enough. I'm not unique enough. You know, we could go into a whole, I could go off on a big, big long tangent of like where this comes from in terms of our, you know, relationship with parents and childhood. It's usually kind of childhood needs not being met. And as children, we don't, you know, we don't go, oh, but, you know, my mom's not here because she needs to work hard because she's trying to support everyone. She's doing the best she can. But you just go, well, she's not here. She's not paying attention to me. So that must mean I'm not important. So that must mean I'm not enough. You know, it can be as simple as that. So a lot of us, you know, as much as we try, I think, to be perfect parents, we're never going to leave our children not traumatized, not even worth trying. But yeah, but a lot of us kind of internalize that belief of I'm not enough. And that can really be at the heart of money mindset, because you go, you know, I'm not good enough. I'm not experienced enough to be charging that much. I'm not, you know, you don't believe in what you can offer in return, basically, because you just don't believe in yourself, essentially. So those are the two kind of big beliefs. It's not available to me because it never was. And this is something that's for other people. You can't have it all, or I'm not enough in order to kind of charge my worth. So those are the two big beliefs that are at the heart of it. I think what we can do to start to change some of those or address them, I think, again, firstly, it's kind of just shifting your perspective. So actually thinking about the fact that abundance is something that actually is so abundant in nature, right? So even just looking around you in nature, there's always enough, actually. There's always enough to go around. So I think especially what we experience as, again, coaches, healers, light workers, you start seeing other people like you everywhere. And you go, well, you know, there's no space for me, or there's already so many other people doing this and they're doing it better, or, you know, they're more experienced than me. So who am I to be able to, you know, put myself out there and charge for this as well? And there's not enough clients, there's not enough money to go around, but that's just not true. I think a way to flip that on its head is that you think, well, there's more and more coaches, so there must be more and more clients, right? It's a hugely growing sector. So clearly demand is growing. And actually it's a good thing that there's more and more coaches, because it means that people are becoming more aware of coaching and people are accepting it more, right? Whereas 10 years ago, people were like, oh, life coach, what even is that? Now it's kind of normal to have a coach. So yeah, that actually creates more opportunity and abundance is there in abundance. And then I think the other, you know, the other thought that to me is interesting around this is that as babies, when we're born, we know that we're enough, right? Babies come into the world. They don't come into the world thinking, oh, well, you know, I better people please in order to get what I want. No, they're like, well, I'm entitled to this, right? Mm. I'm here. And like, obviously everyone's going to love me. Obviously I'm going to be fed on time. And like, obviously I'm going to have all of my needs met because I'm great and I'm adorable. Like you never doubt that as a child, right? So we are born with this innate confidence and this like innate sense of enoughness. And it's just that we lose it somewhere along the way. But because we're born with it, it means we're always able to go back to that and to find it within ourselves and to actually undo the beliefs that ever made us think that we weren't enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing all that. And I think what comes up in my mind when you're speaking through all this as well, it's also valuable. I think, you know, for me, what this also comes back to is like, it's really uncomfortable as well to speak about money and to talk about what we need and what we want. Because yeah, based on like where our circumstances come from, we might not be used to doing that. Or, you know, especially as women, I think even just the topic of money is like, you know, there's so much sort of shame about that still, you know, even just looking at statistics, like women are still so underpaid compared to men. And yeah, I don't know. I think for me, in terms of the work we've been doing as well, it is just trying to speak up more as well and ask for what I want. And it doesn't also, it's true, it doesn't also always need to be that sort of monetary piece, but actually just, does that mean more rest? You know, that's a big one at the moment for me. And does that mean more, yeah, more time? I think can be really powerful just to speak what you need.
Mm-hmm. Right. If you have this belief that making money is hard work, and for example, you always had a parent that was always working and you never really got to see them, and you knew that they needed to do that to make ends meet, it leaves you with this belief that you have to work that hard. You have to be putting in your, you know, 60, 80 hours a week in order to deserve the money that you're making. So you burn yourself out doing that. So it's actually not just about the actual monetary value, but it's the value of your time and the time that you spend. And also seeing that, you know what, I could work just 3 days a week and probably still, you know, make enough money. So it's not just the value of the money, if that makes sense, but it's actually your time and the balance that you have as well.
Yeah. Like literally that example was me. So that is like what happened to me, right? It's like I watched my mom sort of growing up, and she was always working to put food on the table from when my dad left when I was really young. I'm sure a lot of listeners can relate to this, you know, the 90s divorce and how that affected you. And I think it's so interesting to look at that now of how that does tie into your self-worth and totally everything you just said. Like, I am so guilty of doing so much because I ultimately, what it comes down to is I just want to be seen and I want to be loved, and it makes me feel worthy to be doing more. And yeah, it's really hard to change that because it's ingrained. It's like from when you were a kid, you know, it's really tough to do it. But
it's
again, I think
pleasing as well, what you say, it's like, it's having to prove your worth, right? Like I am not enough just for who I am.
Right.
So I need to do something. I need to get good grades. I need to, you know, take care of everyone. Actually, you know, again, I think a lot of us listening to this probably, we are that kind of carer archetype. So we're used to looking after other people and doing things for them in order to receive love and to be, you know, accepted and have our needs met and in return.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I'm sure a lot of people will be able to relate to that. But I do think, you know, having that awareness, I think, you know, we're speaking for sort of our generation now, but I think just being aware of these things is already, you know, a huge stepping stone, right, in the right direction. And just being able to catch ourselves when those limiting beliefs come in and reframe that. And I think we've talked about this, Kata, before, just personally, but I think, you know, you moved to Mexico and I know that you found so much abundance in a new place that you live. And like, I would just love to know actually, like, yeah, what are some of the ways that you found more abundance within your money mindset, like from a personal experience now?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's been, you know, always we turn our wounds into wisdom, right? So I'm not talking about this from a point of view of like someone who's always had a great money mindset either, but it's something that I've definitely worked on as well. And actually, yeah, for me, so I Well, in terms of my personal story, I guess I was working for 10 plus years in creative agencies in London and Singapore and Amsterdam. Also kind of in the classic, you know, agency mindset of like working really hard and like always kind of hustling. Eventually sort of during the pandemic, you know, that really kind of clashed with this kind of sense of standstill. And like, I felt like a real sense of burnout actually in the summer of 2020. And I started to ask myself, you know, what do I really want to do? And like, what is it I feel called to do? Cause I don't feel like this is coming from my heart. You know, it's fun. I'm actually enjoying my job. It pays well. I'm good at it, but it doesn't really feel like there's something missing. So I went on this kind of search to find the thing that I want to do. And I knew I wanted to work with people, and actually through my own personal journey, realized that I wanted to get into coaching because I was learning so much that I just wanted to sort of share with other people. And decided to take this kind of almost like a self-imposed sabbatical, I guess, and take a year, maybe 2 years out to just go travel, quit my job, go travel, learn something new, and kind of really sort of go on this journey of becoming a coach, a therapist, a healer. And in doing that, I needed to kind of go from this mindset of like working full time, being right. employed, you know, like having a steady paycheck mm-hmm. to living off my savings, or, you know, kind of thinking of freelancing, building my own business, working for myself, like a lot of these things, you know, talk about what's familiar and what's not. Like that's definitely never been familiar to me because all mm-hmm. my life I've always been working as an employee and on kind of the paycheck basis. So that came with a lot of fear and a lot of insecurity, and like really brought up a lot of these beliefs for me. And like I did a lot of digging into where these beliefs come from for me, because even, you know, even now I'm still kind of working on setting up this business. So it's, you know, it's also not something that's ever finished. I think it's kind of a process, right? That you're in. So you get better at it. You get better at catching yourself and you start working on the beliefs, but it's not something that happens overnight either. And it's a kind of, you constantly have to remind yourself and kind of rewire and like work on these new patterns of thinking, of just knowing that, you know I've got this, I've budgeted for this as well. I know that, you know, I'm following what I know, like I'm following the path that I know I need to be on. It's fulfilling to me. And I know that the money will come mm-hmm. because I'm, you know, doing the thing that I love. I think it's also just having that faith in a sense, in yourself, in your own abilities. And also knowing that, like, you know, I could always, you know, like we talked about, and you were like, well, I can always be a dog walker. I know I have a lot of skill. I mean, I could walk dogs, but I have a lot of skills I can also fall back on. So it's kind of, it's almost, again, kind of parenting yourself a little bit and just like calming the anxious part of your mind and being like, you know what? I'm a grown up. I'm going to be okay, whatever happens. But actually I just need to have this kind of faith in myself that, and in the universe, that it's going to, if I follow the path, it's going to provide. So for me, it's really, this has been the kind of journey. So working on my own beliefs, understanding where they came from, transforming them, keep working on them, but also having this sense of like, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like the ultimate test, really, isn't it? So what you're doing now, which I absolutely love. And I can also kind of, we've sort of been on similar paths in a way, because now I'm sort of doing my own business as well, but like still freelancing, and I still have to catch myself where at this time of recording, like I don't have a job, technically a freelance job that's paying the bills. And it's like, it is like kind of nurturing that nervous system side. When you get anxious about it, you're just like, no, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be okay. And to observe that is really interesting. And I also think, like, as a, you know, it's a sort of society now, we are trying to reframe and rework the ways that we work and the way that we can pay the bills in a way that's more fulfilling to us. And I think that from our parents' generation, it was just like, you go do the job, you get it done, you don't complain, and that's your life. And I think, you know, in a way that we are now more privileged in a sense to be able to kind of craft our own life in a way that is going to be fulfilling. And I think that's such a beautiful thing to be able to do. And yeah, I love your journey of moving to Mexico and, like, you know, quitting the job and like finding yourself and doing all the work. So it's so inspiring. And I think more people should be able to do it. If you know, your testament's that.
You know, I was working with a client of mine recently, and there was a very interesting kind of belief that we reframed, which might be helpful in this context. And it was, he's kind of trying to move as well from this sort of fixed, you know, employment and steady paycheck into setting up his own business. He's also got a family. He wants to do some improvements to the house. So there's a lot of, you know, pressure on him as well to kind of be the breadwinner of the family. And the belief that he identified that he has is that he needs this job in order to be financially secure and to be financially independent, which obviously creates this like immense pressure to stay there, even if it's really impacting your mental health negatively, your, you know, your balance, your time that you spend with your family, but you have this feeling that you're trapped and that you can't get out of that because you need this job. And actually the way that we flipped it, we turned it on its head, is that I was like, well, actually, what if you thought about it as, I am limiting my earning potential by staying in this job. Because actually by working for an employer, you're always kind of going to be within the salary span, right? That's designated for that job. So even though you know that in agencies, a lot of the time, like, you know, he's very successful there and like he's probably responsible for a lot of clients coming back and bringing in a lot of business. And, you know, we see the kind of the budgets that people allocate to those projects. And then you think about, you know, actually my contribution to this was really big, but I still only get paid my paycheck, right? Whereas if I brought in this client for myself and I did the work, I would be infinitely more rewarded, basically. So actually thinking about it, kind of flipping it on its head and thinking about it as, are you actually limiting your earning potential as opposed to being dependent on this?
Yeah.
I think can be just a really empowering way of thinking about it.
Totally. Yeah. And just looking into it that way. And also just, yeah, being your own boss, I guess is abundant in so many other ways, isn't it? Like how you can use your time and like, yeah. For sure. Like, yeah, we're so restricted. Anyways, we've gone into a whole tangent about that, how restricted we are in corporate companies. So inspiring, Catherine. Thank you so much for this conversation today. I'm going to definitely be re-listening to it outside of our sessions and going through some bits in more detail and like getting my journal out. So I love it so much. Before you go, I know that some people probably love to find and connect with you and go a bit deeper maybe into their own sort of inner work. We've kind of given the highlights of what you can expect in the session. But how can people find and connect with you?
Great. I mean, I would absolutely love for you to find and connect with me. I think, you know, you can work on this stuff yourself, obviously, with a lot of the tips that I've given as well. As part of your personal practice, so through journaling. But I do think that working with a coach or a therapist on this for extra support can be really helpful. I always like to think of it as going to the gym, right? You could go to the gym, make your own training plan and achieve your goals. But especially with being busy with our jobs and like all the other stuff going on in our life, it's difficult to kind of stick to a routine, to even know what to do and like, what are the things I should be eating? What are the exercises I should be doing to achieve my goals? So hiring a coach is a bit like hiring a personal trainer, right? So it's someone who has the knowledge, who's going to create a framework for you, who's also going to cheer you on your journey, who's going to provide some guidance and kind of insight when you need it, and who's going to keep you accountable most importantly, I think. You can absolutely work on your beliefs yourself, but I do think that kind of working with a coach can be super helpful. So if you'd like to connect with me, you can find me on www.thisisalchemy.com. Alchemy spelled with an M-E at the end, as in me. And you can also download a free workbook that I've created called How to Change Reality, which is all about working on your beliefs in order to change your reality. And I'm actually offering a special discount code for Magic and Mindfulness listeners, which is MAGIC with a CK111.
Love that. Oh, love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Awesome. Thank you so much, Kata. It's been such a pleasure having you on today.
Thank you so much, Amy. And looking forward to connecting with a lot of you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Magic and Mindfulness podcast, the podcast designed for the modern mystic and spiritually curious. This season, creative production is by Emily Lasbury, and co-production by George Lasbury. If you'd like to stay connected to what we're up to, make sure you follow us on Instagram at Magic and Mindfulness, and maybe share these episodes with a friend or give us a review or subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. This helps us to keep spreading the message and light work that we do. We appreciate every single one of you that tunes in. So stay well, stay safe, and see you soon.